Our next case this morning is Jones v. Illinois State Toll Highway, case number 113482. Ms. Braun.
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Carol Mosley Braun, representing the plaintiff, or the appellant in this case, Marlena Jones. We are here today because the district court failed or refused to see the role that race played in this civil rights case filed against the Illinois State Toll Highway Authority. Race and racism is the beginning, the middle, and the end of the travesty of Ms. Jones's treatment by an agency of the state, the ISHTA. The district court treated this as a simple case of wrongful termination, and in choosing to be colorblind, bought the state's pretext for discrimination and ignored the narrative that raised significant questions of material fact. The documentary evidence, the testimonial evidence, the circumstantial evidence, and even the physical evidence show discrimination in a mosaic so stunning that the plaintiff clearly deserved a hearing on the facts and a ruling on the law consistent with the letter and intent of Title VII. Your Honors, there is at least seven genuine issues of material fact that were marginalized or ignored by the district court and that constitute reversible error. One, no money was ever embezzled, and the state created a novel excuse of malevolent intent as the basis of its discrimination against Mrs. Jones. The absence of an actus rea, if you will, is a genuine issue of material fact. Two, it is a genuine issue of material fact whether or not any worker before Ms. Jones has been terminated based solely on speculation about their intent. Three, even Ms. Jones' accuser denied the malevolent intent claimed by the state as the basis of its action. Whether the state's insistence is a mere pretext for discrimination is a material question of fact.
Are you referring there to Ms. Bullock?
Ms. Bullock, exactly.
Was she asked, do you think she meant to steal the money?
Yes, she was, and she denied. She said she never said that.
Where do we find that?
That's in the transcript.
Your Honor, I will find that quote in the transcript for you. It is in the record, though. It is in the transcript and in the record in her testimony. I will have to find the page number.
That she was asked whether she thought Jones intended to steal the money?
Yes, she was, sir. She was asked, and she denied it. And, in fact, she insisted that she, quote, never said that Ms. Jones intended to steal the money. The black eyewitness in this case, the accurate account of collections that Ms. Jones submitted at the end of her shift was never stamped, received by the state, or used in any of its subsequent discipline.
This argument so far is an argument that the agency may have made a mistake in firing her.
No, ma'am.
Rather than evidence of racial discrimination.
No, ma'am, it is not. It is not. The black eyewitness was not interviewed, never interviewed, or allowed to speak. The state refused to accord even this basic right, and that creates, again, another genuine issue of material fact. The administrator admitted he didn't know that a countersigned report of the collections existed and based his investigation entirely on work papers. The real report that Ms. Jones filed was deep-sixed by someone we still don't know who. The irregular process by which the state treated Ms. Jones, again, is another material question of fact. It is a genuine issue of fact that other white workers who actually took money received no more than a slap on the wrist while this black woman was fired based on no more than gossip and imagination about what she wanted to do.
Are you referring to Puglia there?
Puglia and others, Your Honor.
Now, Puglia, nobody took the money home, brought it back in the vest, right?
Puglia took the money home, kept it for a week, and then brought it back.
And nobody knew it was missing?
No, they knew it was missing. They just didn't discipline her for it. They knew it was missing and told her she had to bring it back. That's correct. And there were others, Your Honor. There were others. But as uncomfortable as discussions of racism may be, Your Honors, it is impossible, an oxymoron even, to do justice in a civil rights case by ignoring it. That the district court did not acknowledge race is a fatal flaw in its ruling that Mrs. Jones failed to make a prima facie case of discrimination, and its astonishing conclusion that the state's conduct was reasonable. Indeed, racially unacceptable discrimination is written all over the face of this case. The district court abused its discretion in not applying the proper standard for summary judgment, for shifting the burden of proof at a preliminary stage of the proceedings, for blaming the plaintiff for the discrimination she experienced at this agency, and for finding as reasonable matters that defy reason or logic. What is shocking, Your Honors, however, and a throwback to the bad old days of officially sponsored racism, was that the leadership of an agency of the state of Illinois chose gossip over documentary evidence?
Counsel, what we've been hearing thus far is mostly rhetoric. We need you to point to what evidence there was in the record before the district judge at the time of the summary judgment ruling in this case. Not that came later, because that's outside the purview of the appellate record, but what was before the district judge at the time that the ruling was made that points to pretext.
Yes.
As opposed to just maybe the decision to fire her was a mistake.
Okay. Your Honor, I'm happy to do that. To begin with, there is the, on 128.11 at docket number 48, the exhibit by the plaintiff of the Fivelson memo, which goes on, that's the investigator, that goes on at length to talk about the work papers, and then in the final paragraph says the undersigned requested copies of any documents left around. It was provided to him, and an additional TC-12 from Jones that was signed by Michelle Bullock, and a TC-11 prepared for Ms. Jones. So in other words, there was, in the last paragraph, he acknowledges that there was a doubly countersigned TC-12. He acknowledges that, but dismisses all of that in favor of the forged work papers that were the basis of the discipline.
Forged work papers?
Forged, yes, absolutely, Your Honor. They were forged. They were written over. They were submitted and stamped, received by the state. Stamped, received by the ISHTA, even though Ms. Jones had used them. They were scratch papers. And they were stamped received, whereas the real TC-12, the one that she reported all of the $10,000 worth of collections, that was not only not stamped, it was not countersigned, and the real TC-12 was not stamped, but was countersigned and was never seen until at the end, until Mr. Fivelson mentions it.
Any of this evidence of racial discrimination? Maybe the investigation was sloppy. Maybe it was incomplete.
One has to look no further than the fact that the eyewitnesses, the two black people involved in this, were not listened to at all. Ms. Jones's protestations were ignored, and Mr. Miller, who was in the room, the other eyewitness, was never interviewed. And quite frankly,
do you know what he would have said if he had been interviewed?
We don't know. Mr. Miller was fired shortly after this case. After Ms. Jones was fired, he was fired. And I think, Your Honors, that, again, what is shocking about this case and a throwback to the bad old days of officially sponsored racism was that the leadership of the state of Illinois chose gossip over the evidence, over physical evidence, over the protestations of Ms. Jones, and even over the opportunity. They passed on the opportunity to hear from a black eyewitness to the events, all to create new rules for her as justification of their discrimination. The state chose the witnesses, the testimony, which changed, by the way. And I would, Your Honor, I couldn't put my hand just then on the document, but Ms. Bullock's testimony changed several times. But she did insist all through it that she had never said that Ms. Jones intended to steal. So a vacillating, weak witness on the one hand against her, a mute witness on the other hand against her, and or not against her, but could have been potentially for her, Judge Cutter, we don't know what he would have said. We believe that he would have supported Ms. Jones' statement that she had no intention at all. She was trying to get the paperwork right. $10,000 in coins and dollars and dollar bills from a woman who has worked with the tollway for 15 years, and they ran her out of town on a rail of that. The insinuation, and this gets to your question, Your Honor, about how do we know this was more than just a mistake, the insinuation of criminality was sufficient by the ISHTA to overcome the protestations of the black accused, of the black eyewitness, that might have tipped the balance in her favor, as well as the paperwork, even the paper trail. If you want, I was not allowed to bring big pictures, but I wanted the court to examine closely the documents in this case, because the documents make it very clear that the work papers have scratches and X's on it. The real TC-12 that showed that every penny of $10,000 was accounted for and was countersigned, that TC-12 does not have the state stamp on it, never appeared in the conduct of this case.
Just so I understand, you're talking about the TC-12 that was prepared, signed by Jones and signed by Bullock after Jones took the $40 out of it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I would point out also, Your Honor, that in the course of the conduct, they have $10,000 in nickels, dimes, quarters, and dollars, and the highest denomination is a $20 bill. Miss Jones counted every bit of it, okay, in the course of sitting there around there other people. In the course of it, as had been done by others, this was not new. There was no policy until very recently, and that's something else I wasn't.
Expired.
Oh, sorry. Your Honor, my time has expired. I'd like to reserve time on rebuttal. And
we'll see.
Thank you.
Ms. Wisher?
Good morning, Your Honor and Counsel. May it please the Court, Nadine Wickern on behalf of the Tollway. Your Honors, I want to start by pointing out the seven documents that were attached to the appellant's opening brief that are not in the record. On pages 3 and 4 of her reply brief, she claims that they are and cites record at 80, 85, 86, and 159. If you look at those documents and match them to A6 through A16 and A23 to 28 of her appendix, those do not match. So these documents are not in the record. As the court knows, the appeal is not a place to introduce new evidentiary materials, and when Ms. Jones asked in her Rule 60 motion for the court to reopen summary judgment and discovery, the court declined, and she has not argued that that was an abuse of discretion in this court.
Were any of those seven documents submitted by the defendant as part of its summary judgment papers?
No, Your Honor.
None of them?
No. They were produced during discovery, but neither party entered them in the record. On the merits, I would like to start by turning to the claim that Bullock's statements were inconsistent. All of her statements were inconsistent throughout. The record shows that the report she first wrote on the day of the incident did not say whether she thought Ms. Jones intended to steal. She testified to that also before the Inspector General, and she testified to that in her deposition in this court. We discussed that at pages 37 to 40 of our brief. So Bullock's statements about what she saw and what happened have been consistent in all three places where she's made statements. And what she said was that when she came in to count the money at the time that the shift was going to change, she was not told that there had been an overcount in the money. Instead, she began counting the money and realized that there was a shortage of $40 in the dimes. She counted that there were 602 rolls, but there were 600, written on the paper was 611. At this point, she says Miss Jones pulled out $40 from her pocket and said, "Oh, that's where it was."
Incidentally, could you see the money in Jones's pocket before she pulled it out?
According to Bullock, she did not, and she did not know it was there. Miss Jones had said that she put it in the pocket when Bullock was in the room, but Bullock disputes that. And the
Was it sticking out of her pocket?
Right? No. She never said it was sticking out of her pocket, although she said often that her pocket was open. So it's not clear what she meant by that. But in the Inspector General's determination, he found that Bullock was credible and that Ms. Jones was not, and decided that her version of what happened is what happened. And that is based in part on the fact that on the initial TC 12 form, she wrote that there were 611 dimes, but she also wrote that there were only two $10 bills when there were, in fact, six. So that, coupled with the fact that she had put them in her pocket, where all the money is supposed to be on the table the whole time. So even if the incoming person, if there is an overage, you're supposed to allow the incoming person to count all of the money and make that same determination themselves.
She apparently was not the first collector to put put the bills in her pocket. Is that...
Unfortunately, and this is why there's procedures for how the money is supposed to be counted, and I think the evidence here that is fatal to Ms. Jones's claim is that involving Mr. Glenn Wickey. Like Jones, he was a collector.
The fact that you have treated someone else similarly does not entitle you to summary judgment. Okay?
That is true.
Could you focus on Puglia?
Yes.
That's the comparator the plaintiff is relying upon.
Puglia, the incident involving Puglia happened in 2009, whereas this happened in 2007. She was a toll collector who had put $40 in her safety vest and had forgotten it. Now, the safety vests are kept.
Okay, that's her story.
That's her story.
Was there evidence that the authority knew that money was missing?
No. The evidence was that she brought it to the attention of the authority that she had left that $40 in her vest. Now, what happens is that the money that is...
Did she turn in one of these forms after counting the money? And
no, because toll collectors aren't required to fill out those forms.
She was just a collector, right?
Right. Okay. All the money that's collected for tolls is counted off-site. It's a different process than the money that's counted for the bank, for the change fund. And that money, the discrepancy might have been found eventually, but it hadn't been found yet. She brought it to the attention of the tollway before it was found. So
the distinction between Puglia and Ms. Jones is that Ms. Jones did have this dual role as a toll collector and a collector in charge, responsible for doing the counting off-site and filling out the TC-12, and that she falsified a TC-12, or those were the allegations that were substantiated against her.
Right. And there was no evidence that was found that Puglia intended to keep the money or that she intended to steal. And she was charged and suspended for having unsecured funds. So it was
She apparently kept it for 5 days or something like that?
Well, the safety vests are kept in lockers at the facility, so there's no evidence that she took it home with her. It's that she found it in her safety vest when she came back to work. So I don't think the record reflects that she took it home with her.
Did she ever say why she put the money in her vest?
Well, there is a suggestion in the record that often when toll collectors need to go into the facility to get more change, they put the money in their vest while they're walking across the lanes of traffic as a sort of a safety precaution, and so the money doesn't fly off. So it is not unusual for someone to have money in their vest when they go in to make change.
That's one of the problems with a case like this. If you've got all these people putting money in their vest, it doesn't mean a whole lot after a while, I guess.
Well, there is no dispute that in the situation where there is a change in shift and the collector in charge is supposed to be counting the money, there's no reason for anyone to put money in their pocket in that situation because all the money is supposed to be counted by both parties. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, thank you. Ms. Brown, your time had expired, but I'll give you a minute in rebuttal if you have anything further to add.
Thank you, Your Honor. I do. I have here a document that traces exactly the documents that were put into the record by both the state and by the plaintiff. Your Rule 10 does not allow that the novel notion that the only records that can be referred to are those put in by the plaintiff. In this situation, we refer to documents that were in the record by both the state, primarily in the state, as well as by the plaintiff. And I have the list here. I'm happy to share it with the court if allowed to do so. That's the first point. The second point, however, is that, again, all this plethora, this mosaic of treatment that Ms. Jones was subjected to is novel. And to get on the slippery slope of talking about her intent without giving her a chance or the other black eyewitness really is a throwback and constitutes discrimination. The point is, we only needed one reason to have a genuine issue of material fact heard by the district court. That is the question before this court. Whether there was enough of a fact conflict and controversy here that the district court should have allowed Mrs. Jones a full hearing on the merits to bring out these facts.
Did you interview this other black witness?
No, sir. I just inherited this case after it had been dismissed on summary judgment.
Anybody ever interview him?
I don't believe anyone has ever interviewed him. To my knowledge, we found him. We finally found him. When I took the case, I asked that somebody go look for him. But he's never been heard from.
Well, and then it's just a failure of proof, which falls on the plaintiff.
Oh, I'm sure that's right, Your Honor. But again, there are other genuine issues of material fact that the district court should not have disallowed and should have been heard. It was not reasonable under the circumstances to conclude that the state had a basis for its decisions.
Thank you, counsel. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. We'll move to our next case this morning.